May it please the court, this is an appeal of a case that has had a long history. It involves a fire that occurred in 2005 and a suit was filed in 2007, and it has actually been before this court once or twice before. So we are now here again. The case was scheduled for trial three times, and all three times at the essentially last minute, the trial had to be aborted because of two dismissals, basically, of the case, and one that basically ruled that the expert was not going to be allowed to testify. So the issue here is the court's ruling and the two motions in limine as to the ability or qualifications of the plaintiff's experts to testify. The plaintiff's position is that the court really did not apply the correct standard, and instead of being a gatekeeper, wound up being really a fact finder, or used a fact finding approach in scrutinizing the testimony and the reports of the plaintiff's experts. Is actually three of them, but two of them are work together.
Mr. Romano, as I understand it, you proffered two experts, one after the other, after the first proffer was rejected, right, and the second was rejected. Is it right that if we were to reverse on one expert but not the other, your case would go forward?
Yes.
Wouldn't matter which one. Okay.
And in fact, the court ruled that even if you combine all three experts, there still wouldn't be enough, at least in Judge Parkin's ruling.
I understand that the argument, I believe the argument in both cases is that the court, it's not really about what Daubert requires, but whether the court applied it correctly. Is that right?
That's exactly right, Your Honor, because we don't question the Daubert criterion or the five-prong test that is required. In fact, I was going to mention it briefly. The real issue, there's two parts of the test. The one talks about the qualifications, where the witness is qualified by knowledge, skill, experience, training, or education. And the other talks about whether it's based upon information reasonably relied on by other experts in a particular field.
Well, but your argument is that the court really was making finding facts rather than applying the law to the facts.
And
if that's right, then how do you characterize the error? That is, what is the error of law that you're arguing for?
Well, the cases clearly say that once the court determines that a person is qualified and that there is it's reasonable and reliable, the court cannot look at the conclusion. The court cannot question the facts. The court cannot say, I don't believe this expert.
But can't the court say this expert's proffered testimony, has no basis in science?
The court can say that. Yes.
Isn't that basically saying
that the second prong, which is not based upon information that reasonably would be
peer-reviewed, not in the literature, it wasn't peer-reviewed, it's not verifiable.
Exactly.
Isn't that what happened here?
No, not really, because on the first expert, the expert had 20 years experience. The other two experts had 35 and 39 years experience. But on the first expert, the court basically said that the expert was contradicting himself, which, for example, the court said he only mentioned the physics of fire, the signs of fire, twice in his report. Well, I mean, do you need to mention it three times in order to qualify? So the court basically questioned his testimony, whether he was really qualified or not.
What about the methodology used and relying on a study for a purpose that the study itself said it could not be used?
I don't mean to disagree with Your Honor.
I'm just asking a question.
No, I understand, but the study did not say that. The study made it very clear that the disclaimer was dealing with rating. The issue was they were saying, do not use this study to rate something. Rating, fire ratings, I understand it, you know, is a system where it's rated, I don't know if it's 1, 2, 3 or ABC, but whatever the rating is, that you would rate something for fire resistant. And as our expert testified, that deals with the structural damage. In other words, if it's rated, whatever, ABC, then it won't be damaged for an hour, whatever it is, but that's the structure. What he said, what our experts are talking about is not rating, but using the test results, which the test itself, the underwriter's laboratory's test itself said, was fine. The test results were fine. They did not question that. And in fact, they said it shows comparable length of time before a wall covering, gypsum or a drywall is damaged. Our experts said, all we're doing is saying, we take the worst scenario, 14 minutes, and we say the gypsum will protect the structure for 14 minutes. The structure being the study, the frame of the house, as compared to the covering of the structure. So they're saying, we're not using this for rating. We're not saying that this allows or provides for a rating of whatever it is, ABC. We're saying that the test result shows that drywall will protect the stud for at least 14 minutes. And we're saying in those 14 minutes, if they had water, the structure would have been protected, the fire would have been put out, the drywall may have been discolored, may have been even damaged somewhat, but the structure would not have been, and it could have been reused. In fact, one of the experts, Kiefer, said, I had six comparable fires. I've had where we were able to save part of the building. He said, I've seen many houses where we go in and the drywall, we pull it off and the structure is perfectly fine. And he also said, putting aside the UL test results, my opinion would still be the same without the UL test result. That just gives me more confidence in my opinion. That's based on my experience as a firefighter, as an engineer or whatever he was. I think some of them were fire protection engineer. So it's pretty clear that when the court said, when they said that we're talking about, Kiefer and Davidson both said, the fire rating, what we're using it for, is like apples and oranges. We're talking about apples and oranges here. The court didn't believe that. Now, I mean, once the expert says, the court did not question that the test was right. They just used the disclaimer to say, well, it shouldn't be used at all. But that's not correct. It could be used very easily. But the court did not believe that it was apples and oranges. Now, isn't that really being fact finder? I mean, can the court say, I don't believe these experts as to apples and oranges? That's the gist, really, of the court's holding and the gist of this appeal. And the court's approach throughout this case, frankly, well, has been a fact finder.
But you keep on arguing that the court didn't believe the expert. That presupposes that the expert connected the dots in a way that would satisfy Daubert, but that the court just didn't believe the testimony. The counter argument is, yeah, the court tried to connect the dots and found that, you know, credible or not, the testimony, you know, fell apart scientifically. Because this expert, aside from not being qualified as a structural engineer, never saw the site of the fire, you know, never set foot in the house after the fire, and basically was relying on a qualitative study that said, in effect, that if you use material A, it'll take X number of minutes on average to burn. Use material B, it'll take a little longer. And if you use material C, it'll take a little longer than that, without connecting that to anything that was actually on the ground. Isn't that what we're dealing with here?
Well, not really, Ryan, because as so far as Morrill is concerned, he does talk about Morrill not having knowledge akin, not necessarily to be a structural engineer, but akin to a structural engineering, so far as Muriel is concerned. But Muriel said, but looking at structure is all what I do. So far as the other two experts are concerned, he does not question their ability as to structural engineers at all. He does not question their ability or their knowledge or anything. What he says as to them was the UL test should not be used, and what he says was they did not testify or they did not give an opinion as to, or did not consider what damage there would have been after if there had been water, if the water had been used, which was not correct. All three of them considered that. All three of them said the basement could have been saved because thermal heat goes up and not down. There could have been water damage. I mean, the water would not have damaged it. There could have been smoke damage, but no damage to the structure. So the structural engineering argument doesn't really apply to Kiefner and Davison, because he never questioned their ability as to structural engineering at all. He only had two points. UL test should not be used, and they did not consider what damage would have occurred afterwards. But we're talking about a fire, Your Honor. I mean, they could not have been at the scene. The scene, obviously, the fire was all gone, obviously. But they looked at photographs. They looked at videos. They looked at the dispatch records. They looked at everything that was the testimony of the people, affidavits. They looked at everything that they possibly could look at. And the thing that's sort of like is concerning is that we're not talking about, a science, really. We're talking about a fire, and all we can, there is no real, I mean, the only test that they could find was this UL test.
Well, let's put Daubert to one side and just talk in terms of plain civil procedure. You would agree, would you not, that for an issue to go to the jury, in this case the issue of causation, the plaintiff has to put into the record enough evidence to create a prima facie case.
Oh, of course, right? Yes, Your Honor, certainly.
What you have here is evidence, the admitted fact that there was no water or insufficient water that could be pumped into the house until they got to the third hydrant. So the first two failed. We know that. We also, I guess, you know, at least intuitively or theoretically, that if the first hydrant had worked, then there would have been water, and there's at least a possibility that in that case they could have hosed down the inside of the house and put the fire out before it did structural damage. But that is, whether or not that in fact would have happened is an unknown, because there's no other evidence to raise that possibility to at least a probability. Tell me if that's all based, tell me how.
It is, Your Honor, respectfully, because two things. First of all, if you use Your Honor's approach, then he might as well, I mean, we'll never be able to try a case like this, because no one is going to say with certainty what could be saved or could not be saved. We all know fires are different, so forth and so on. And in fact, Judge Parkins tried very hard to dismiss this case, and if it wasn't for the concession of the defendant, it would have been dismissed, because he would have said this tariff applies even if it's willful and wanton, and you can't do it. So, and he basically tried to convince them not to do that. In fact, he told them not to do that, and they insisted, and that's what happened. And he said, well, he had to rule that it was waived, which frankly was sort of atypical for the court to do that. But if you want to take that approach, then there is, I mean, you might as well just say, look, if there's a fire, we'll never be able to prove, and the court found they were grossly negligent. At least there was evidence of grossly negligence. For half an hour, there was no water here. And obviously, you know, water fights fire. For half an hour, it burned. But if that's the case, then nothing will ever, I mean, there's no way that we'll ever be, I mean, they can go ahead and not do anything that we want to do, because we'll never be able to prove our case. But in this case, however, there was testimony, two neighbors, affidavits said, small fire. Photographs to show that the fire was not engaged in the garage section of the house. When they arrived, that portion of the house was completely not burning. Photographs showed that. Now, the issue is, well, water has saved it. Three experts say It would have, because the drywall would have saved the structure. The basement would have not been, we would not have had to replace the basement, the foundation, and so forth. You may argue about, and their expert, by the way, doesn't use anything differently when he does, when he says no, it could not have been saved. And you may argue that to the jury, that really it couldn't have been saved. But can't, I mean, if you say that we cannot get to the jury on what we have, no case could get to the jury, because there's no science involved with fighting a fire. It's not like, you know, other kind of science that we're talking about. Or, I mean,
well, if that's the case, are you arguing that there is no Daubert issue at all?
No. I'm arguing that you just can't have anybody get up. I mean, in fact, in this case, the judge said that which was, he was wrong. That because when he said about three chances, that I said I don't need anybody, which was completely wrong. That never happened, and it's clear it never happened. But sure, I mean, I can't go up there and say, you know, Mr. Brown, my client, tell him how the house could have been saved. Of course, he has no ability to do that. Certainly, you need some expertise, you need some knowledge, you need something. But how you tie this together is nothing more than experience of what you've learned and what you've seen and what you do. And in this case, the test, the
well,
the
that all of that
test.
All of that the trial judge said was ipsy dixit.
Well,
the expert saying, well, you know, if the first water pump had worked, there would have been enough water in the house to prevent the fire from doing any structural damage. Why? Because of all my experience and all of my intuition about that.
But it was not ipsy dixit, because they gave a reason. They said the gypsum would protect it. They said, for example, the fire, you know, goes up, so the basement would have been protected. I mean, they gave a lot of reasons. 156 pages of deposition, the testimony.
You're using the time
yes,
you reserved. Do you want to keep the remaining time or continue now?
If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them, but if not, I will retain my time.
Okay.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. Sean Ballew, Your Honor, Ballard Spahr, LLP, and with me is my colleague, Chad Flores. I think the most appropriate place for me to start is with your line of questions, Justice Jacobs. You asked whether the dots were put together, and ultimately, Judge Parkins ruled that those dots weren't put together. But even before that, he ruled that the plaintiffs didn't even produce somebody qualified to attempt to put these dots together. So if you look at the first piece of the expert testimony, there's an exhibit that the appellants put in to the record. That's a diagram.
Well, before you get to that, you know, Mr. Ramuno argues, and I think there's plausibility in the argument that, you know, if we uphold the trial judge's reasoning, there basically will never be able be any way to prove a case of this kind. Even if you posit that somehow, you know, the first fire plug would have worked because it's speculation, you know, to be able to, you know, with the, to it, there may be an intuition and certainly a possibility that the earlier the water gets sprayed on the fire, the more likely it is the fire will be put out before it does damage. But that's just speculation, not enough to go to a jury. So how do you raise speculation to a prima facie case? It just is a general matter.
You can't, Your Honor. That
so he's right. You can never prove a case like
there
this.
There are certain instances where a plaintiff cannot prove causation. And without that link, they have not established a claim of negligence.
But the argument here is that in a case of this kind, you know, speaking generically, it'll never be possible to prove causation.
I don't believe that's generically true. I think it's specifically true.
Okay, if it isn't generically true, give us one example of a hypothetical case where, with proper expert testimony measured by Daubert, you should be able to get to a jury.
Okay. Well, tying it into this case, if that the plaintiffs could have established through a fire origin expert that the fire would have been contained to this single room had the water begun at a certain time. They have that fact established. Now they can assert that the rest of this building was in pristine condition, was not damaged by water, was not damaged by smoke. Then they'd have to have another expert, which Judge Parkins gave them the roadmap to. You need to get me a structural engineer that says that, look, all I need to do is peel away this one contained section that was damaged. And I'm going to assume, for the sake of a Daubert examination, that there's no water damage to the rest of the home or there's no smoke damage to the rest of the home. But from an engineering standpoint, I want you to have somebody come in here and say, with that part of the house removed, I could have come in and just started hammering in and built that room back. So the reason that could happen generically, the reason why it couldn't happen in this case is because if you look at their first expert says, based on my experience, what would have been saved in the house is everything but the garage and the basement. All right. So let's assume that they could establish that as a fact. They need to take the next step, Your Honor. They need to come in with a structural engineer and say, hey, all right, I have a burned-out house, a shell of a house. I have an attached garage that somehow didn't have any smoke damage or any water damage. And I have a basement that has no smoke damage or water damage. A structural engineer could come in and say, yes, those two aspects of the house were not harmed, would not have been harmed if they would have been able to stop the fire. And you can come in and say, look, they would have been able to take a hammer out and start constructing at that point. The common sense...
Well, why wouldn't that be an ipsy dixit that would be subject to the same criticism? Well,
no, you're. I guess what I skipped over is the structural engineer would say, you know, I graduated with a structural engineering degree. Well, I went out there, I tested the wood. I tested it for water damage. I tested it for smoke damage. I did a model of the same, a scaled model of this same type of fire with the fire starting in this point. And based on the application of water at this point and the flow of where the water would have went and where the smoke would have went, you would have had a house that would have been 90% pristine. So that's the link that Judge Parkins told them they had to get, and they never did. So to back up, he said, I need that. For me as the gatekeeper, the kind of expertise that I need is a structural engineer that could say, hey, yeah, that part of it would have been capable of reuse. He said that, he said, what is germane is what portion of the building, if any, would have remained structurally sound had the hydrants been working. That was what he previewed for them in their first attempt to provide an expert opinion. Given that opportunity, they still didn't come out with that person with that expertise. So despite the flaws in their logic, their methodology, their science, the ipsy-dixit finding, they didn't even get over the primary threshold, Your Honors, of having the expert with the expertise that they needed to answer the burning question that the court had. So that was their first problem.
So your point then is that whether we call it ipsy-dixit or speculation, that a proper expert might have been able to render an opinion that would be admissible. But in this case, we never get to that because they never presented a qualified expert in Judge Parkins' opinion. So without that threshold determination that someone was there qualified to say something, whatever would have been said is irrelevant because not having a qualified expert was dispositive.
That's our first argument.
Well, let me ask a follow-up question then, Justice Holland. Let's assume that the expert was a qualified structural engineer but gave the same opinion that in fact was given here. Would the fact that the expert was a qualified structural engineer save it under Daubert?
No.
Why not?
Because that there we go to the next level of the analysis. If you look at let's assume Morrill was a structural engineer and he signed that same opinion. His opinion fails for the same reasons as Judge Parkins said they did. He just basically leaped. It's a naked conclusion that based on my experience, this is what could have happened.
So what he needed, what he would have had to do was to give the court some structural engineering talk rather than this is my belief.
Well, Your Honor, the total science, so to speak, in both opinions, I think there's a complete absence of any science in the first one. You can't come in and say, I'm a structural engineer, and because I'm well-educated and I've had great experience, this is what would have happened. That doesn't qualify for Daubert. The only science we see in any of these expert reports is the application of a underwriter's laboratory report that has a disconnect entirely to what they were attempting to do. So assuming it was a structural engineer,
Let me just make sure I have this right. So first it would take a structural engineer. Secondly, the structural engineer would have to say, in my profession, this is the way we would approach this problem. Here's the methodology. And I've applied that methodology in this case, and this is the application, and here's how it comes out.
Correct. Your Honor, it is not only did they not connect the dots, but they didn't have the right person to connect those dots. I think the fact that they didn't get somebody that satisfied the trial court's concern and that he would perform in that gatekeeper role, they didn't have the right person based on credentials. Assuming the court could get comfortable with their credentials, the expert reports themselves were still so fatally flawed that they could not establish that these people were qualified to testify in the Daubert. There's a lot of cases that...
And the reason you say that, as I read your brief, is because they didn't come forward with a methodology or form of analysis that could be replicated so that whenever there was a fire, someone could say the fire burns at this rate, water deals with it at this rate, and therefore we know if you would have had water, the rate of the fire spreading would have been diminished by whatever. And then if they had a methodology that worked, you could apply it to every fire.
Absolutely. I mean, and every fire is different, but there's at least some accepted methodologies where people can... I mean, fire modeling is a complete area of expertise that could have been applied here. Somebody could have taken the materials of construction, modeled some sort of a fire, modeled the water flow, and come to some conclusion.
Well, analogies aren't complete ever. But we know in the area of medical malpractice, you leave a sponge in someone, you don't always need an expert. Here, the fact is they didn't have water for 30 minutes. Doesn't it make sense that some water would have helped?
No, Your Honor. Because a couple things. First and foremost, even if you assume their position, that, well, Morrill says that the garage and basement would have been saved. Their second experts say that the garage, the basement, and three bedrooms would have been saved. That in and of itself creates a problem. Even if you assume the second expert's testimony, all right, there's nothing to say that if the fire stopped there, if there was a complete firewall at that point in the house, that the back end of that was pristine, that remaining structure was reusable going forward. So they missed that part to begin with. If, in fact, that was the case, and the back end of the house would needed to be knocked down and incapable of being used, then they could have had all the water in the world and wouldn't have changed to anything.
Well, the answer that you gave to Justice Allen's question was sort of startling. I mean, are you really arguing that if there had been 30 more minutes to hose water into the inside of the house, it wouldn't have made a difference?
It would not have made one difference to the total destruction of that home.
Why not? At least, I mean, I think every intuition suggests that there would be some difference, whether it would be enough from a legal standpoint, you know, maybe the issue.
Maybe, Your Honor, I'm veering into some factual issues into the case. I think that I don't want to get into that, But the fact that you have a burned out garage, all right, that represents 20% of the home, I think common sense would dictate that nobody in their right mind tries to keep that garage and then build it, their new structure around it. The house is 30 years old. You wouldn't rebuild around that type of environment. At least I'm not a builder, but that seems to be common sense to me. And on the issue of whether it would have made a difference, you know, this is why they fail. I don't have to prove that it wouldn't have made a difference. They have to prove that it did. And what they have not taken into account at all in any of those reports, that, you know, if it didn't get damaged by the fire, what would the water have done?
I mean, well, I thought your answer would have been it might have made a difference. However, that might is not enough to get to a jury, because it's still, Daubert still requires, you know, a reasoned methodology applied to the facts.
I guess the right answer to that question, Your Honor, is could it have? I don't know. But that was what they were supposed to establish. I mean, I do know that if you look at the record, and this does get into some of the other flaws in the expert report, they assume in their both of their reports that if there was water there, that the fire chief who was in command would have taken a more aggressive approach. Well, he testified in an affidavit, he testified that wasn't the case. Now, that's not a factual dispute. They are actually assuming a fact that has no basis, because their whole theory is premised on the fact that he would have taken a more aggressive approach to the fire. So that's their burden. They've had two attempts to establish it, Your Honor, and they haven't. And for that reason...
Well, most of our questions have been focusing on the first expert. There was a second expert and a second opinion rejecting that expert's proffered opinion as well. But my question is very simple. Is there any different legal issue that we have to... does the second expert create a separate legal issue that we have to deal with?
Your Honor, my sense for the proper procedure in this is that their second expert has enveloped whatever the first expert was.
Second expert a structural engineer?
No. So we briefed on both the experts because that's what we were responding to. But my understanding by the use of the word mulligan by the trial court was that the first expert was as if it never happened. And really the operative expert for if they actually go back to trial, if they went back to trial, which we argue should not be the case, they wouldn't be able to put both experts up. They would have to go with their second expert. I can't see an outcome where this court would say we're going to disqualify the second expert, but we're going to allow the first expert to testify. So you asked that question earlier, and by giving them the second chance and referring it to as a mulligan, was my sense that the court said we're going to vacate that whole expert report. We're not going to look at it.
Well, did the second expert explicitly rely on the opinion of the first?
No.
All right.
No. Now, it would be an interesting concept to be able to impeach that second expert with the first expert's report, because the first expert's report says the only thing that could have been saved was the garage in the basement.
Let me ask it differently. In both cases, the expert was not a structural engineer.
That's correct. There were three experts, neither of which were...
Okay, and the second expert used the same or a different methodology than the first?
The first expert didn't use any methodology. The second set of experts, which is actually two individuals, a co-author, attempted to use a UL report that tested materials of construction to see how long it would take for them to be compromised. And the purpose of that test was to compare which ones were better as between that group. That was in a determined environment that they all went into. So there was a controlled environment that all those materials went into. There's nothing in the second expert where they say that, well, they didn't even recognize the true material constructions, that construction, they assumed them. They didn't do any testing to verify that the burn rates would be the same. It was just basically an application of a 14-minute finding from a completely unrelated and separate set of tests. So I don't know if that would even qualify as a methodology, but the death knell to it all was the fact that the the report of which they relied on said, do not rely on this for the type of analysis that you're trying to do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just briefly on this UL report, again, as I stated, that dealt with rating, did not deal with anything else. They made it clear that those results were accurate as between the time that it would take to damage the structure. As far as the structural engineer is concerned, Dover does not require a degree. Dover says that expert is qualified by knowledge, skill, experience, training, or education. Judge Parkins never required a degree of structural engineer. He said you need knowledge akin to a structural engineer.
But your experts were not proffered as being experts in structural engineering, degree or no degree. Isn't that correct?
No, that's not correct. They were. They were. I mean, and they testified. For example, Kiefer testifies that I gained experience 35 years and how buildings are constructed, that is, includes residential, commercial, industrial-type buildings as the structure. Davidson said, of course I have to know about structure, because that's my job, that's what I do. Even Morrill said, looking at structures is what I do. But this structure's hearing is a red herring. The fact of the matter, Your Honor, is that once the structure is saved, the frame is saved, of course you can use it again. Without any, I mean, frankly, nobody uses the structural engineering in residential. They're just not used. They never are used. So this is nothing but a red herring. But the other part of this thing is when he says, well, you would not have done it because would you build around a basement, around the garage? The basement also, of course, could have been saved. That's a separate claim that clearly could have been saved. And there was a methodology. There was a connection of the dots there. They both said, you know, fire goes up, not down. The water would not damage it because it would be pumped out. There would be no reason for any damage whatsoever to the basement. I mean, all those were clearly logical and clearly mythology, clearly where the dots were connected. So there is no reason at all why at least as the basement, if nothing else, that's clear. As to the garage, whether you would build around or not is irrelevant. If the garage would have been saved by water half an hour earlier, as it clearly could have been under all three of this testimony, then they're liable for it. I mean, it's that simple. They caused their gross negligence caused the garage to be damaged, the basement to be damaged, and there has to be some remedy for that. The other thing, of course, is it was dismissed because of three chances, three strikes, and they really were not three strikes. So to that extent, it should not have been dismissed. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both. The court appreciates your arguments. We'll take the matter under advisement. We'll also take a brief recess.